Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips to the PC. It is Saturday, the 26th of July, Anno Domini 2014, and you, oh, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worcester.
And we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. For those of you who missed the lovely and talented Steve Ray, he's one step ahead of the law somewhere in the Midwest. But we hope that he will beat the rap and be with us again next week.
Okay. One can only hope.
One can only hope. Here's the news. Forensic scientist and author Jonathan Johnny Z, we call him.
That'll be fine.
Old Jay-Z.
That's right.
Jonathan Zdziarski has posted the slides from his talk at the 10th Hackers on the Planet Earth, or HOPE, conference in New York. Zdziarski, better known as the hacker Nerve Gas, that I can pronounce, in the iPhone development community, worked as a dev team member on many of the early iOS jailbreaks and is the author of 5 iOS-related O'Reilly books. In December 2013, an NSA program dubbed Dropout Jeep was revealed by security researcher Jacob Applebaum that reportedly gave the agency almost complete access to the iPhone. The leaked document, dated 2008, actually noted that the malware required implant via close access methods, which presumably means physical access to the iPhone, but ominously noted that a remote installation capability will be pursued in a future release. In his talk, Zdziarski demonstrated a number of undocumented, high-value forensic services running on every iOS device and suspicious design omissions in iOS that make collection easier. He also provides examples of forensic artifacts acquired that should never come off the device without user consent. According to one slide, the iPhone is reasonably secure to a physical, typical attacker, and the iPhone 5 and iOS 7 are more secure from everybody except Apple and the government. But he notes that Apple has worked hard to ensure that it can access data on end-user devices on behalf of law enforcement, and links to Apple's law enforcement process guidelines, which clearly spell this out. Zdziarski also notes that simply screen-locking an iPhone doesn't encrypt the data. The only true way to encrypt data is to shut down or power off the phone. Your device is almost always at risk of spilling all data, since it's almost always authenticated, even while locked. This is made possible by undocumented services running on every iOS device, according to Zdziarski's presentation. In what is assumed to be a response to this, Apple has published new information about the diagnostic capabilities of iOS. Apple's new disclosure represents a further step toward transparency and openness, and gives a more detailed breakdown of diagnostic capabilities and background services in iOS. Zdziarski has been in contact with Apple, citing the company's response to his claims. He said that he doesn't buy for a minute that these services are intended solely for diagnostics, mainly because of the data that they actually deliver are not diagnostic data. It's private data. He believes that the data being sent are not the sort that would be used for diagnostics. Apple's new disclosure represents a further step towards transparency and openness, however, and gives a more detailed breakdown of diagnostic capabilities and background services in iOS. So, our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is does Apple's iOS have backdoors for the NSA? And the choices are, of course, don't they all? And anything's possible. And I highly doubt it. And not my widow Applewy-Wappewy. And man, Jobs goes and Apple drops in the pot. So far, we have 30 votes. And you cynics that you are, half of those votes are for, of course, don't they all? And boy, do I know you'll have more to say about this. So, check the forums. If you go down the right-hand side of the screen under fascinating stuff, you'll see the forums. The second forum down is the discussion forum, the poll discussion, it's called. And if you look at that, you'll see I did not put one up. I'll do that right now.
That's all right. We can do that.
How do you like that?
Well, I caught the press release from the other side of this story this week, where I saw the link to Apple's knowledge base article about this new diagnostic information. And I was surprised to see this. And when I saw it come by, I raised an eyebrow and I was like, it's not usual for Apple to just publish this to the world in general. They might make it available to developers, people that want to know how their applications respond and behave behind the scenes. But to make this known to the outside world was kind of unusual. It was something I definitely wasn't expecting.
Well, and that's part of I think, what's been going on. This is a very serious allegation.
Yeah, that's true.
Particularly when you couple it with the fact that for years people have been saying Apple iPhones use more data than other phones.
Oh, data on the wireless network.
On the wireless network. And everybody's going, what is it? What are those data?
Right.
And if it's your private data that's being sent regularly, that's a problem.
For a while, and I know this was a couple of years ago, but they had found that they were collecting information about where the phone had been.
Right.
And they were getting that back to the carriers to let them know, hey, here's where people are actually going with your phone. Here's where their service, you know, the number of bars that you see on the phone itself were less than a carrier might want it to be. So they were working with those pieces of information together. Now, naturally, people saw this and said, wait a minute, my phone can tell where I've been? And it was like, well, yes, it knows which towers to connect to and when to switch off to which one. And that's one of the ways they do it. But they were really concerned, saying, well, this means that my phone's been watching me. And I said, well, yeah, you know that Find My iPhone feature that you use so you can figure out when you left your phone in a cab or on a train or somewhere else? This is kind of how that works. So, you know, it's one of these things where you've got a feature that by itself isn't good or evil, but can be used by people in either direction.
Right. And Zdziarski says that's only part of the data that, because he sniffed the stream going back.
Right.
And it's a lot of personal data.
Yeah.
That shouldn't be coming off your phone.
I'll be very interested to check out these slides and see what else I can learn.
Yeah. But at any rate, I know you'll have more to say about this, so give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, or toll-free 1-800-790-0415. Just like Zach did from Brighton, New York. Welcome, Zach. What's up?
I had a question regarding internet security and firewall settings. I set up my internet connection for my daughter, who's going to be living in Philadelphia, and that's the Comcast service. And so they give you a choice when you configure their router for sort of low, medium, and high security settings. And the medium and high security settings don't allow peer-to-peer functions.
Okay.
And my daughter uses Spotify and Skype. So if I understand that correctly, then I should not use the medium or high settings, or else it's going to exclude her from being able to use those programs?
Well,
certainly under... Here's the deal. Under high or... I'm not entirely sure about Comcast's router,
because
they don't have one. But under high, certainly, and it sounds like under medium as well here.
Yeah, that's what the information says when you go to log into the router and you can customize the settings. It specifically says at medium and high, this will block peer to peer.
Right, right, and that's because peer to peer connectivity happens on a different port from, for example, your web traffic, which happens on port 80,
right,
or your email traffic, which happens on 24.
So the thing about Skype is that, according to the support.skype.com page I'm able to bring up here about which ports need to be open in order to use Skype for Windows, it looks like Skype says that they are using port 80 and port 443. Those are pretty common. Those are the ones that are used by your web browser to do all of your web surfing, as well as any web surfing you would do that would involve encryption, like for shopping online or visiting your bank or things like that. By itself, according to what I'm reading here, I wouldn't expect Skype to fail. But naturally, if she's trying to use it and it's not working, then there may be something else going on.
Okay, because I didn't know if the other option was also to supplement it with a software firewall so that Would that provide a little extra layer of protection if I can't use a medium or a high hardware firewall?
Yeah. The thing about firewalls is they're fantastic until they block you from doing something you want to do.
Right. If you can use, you can run Zone Alarm on a Mac, yeah?
I'm sorry.
Did you say Mac or PC?
No, it's a Windows. Windows 7 professional laptop.
All right. Yeah. There is a software firewall called it's Zone Alarm.
Right.
And one of the nice things about that is you can set it per program.
Uh-huh.
So it's a pain in the neck the first time you start every program. Because the first time you start a program like Skype, Zone Alarm comes up and says, whoa, here's this thing I don't know. What do you want me to do? And you either say block it or let it go, and then you never have to think about it again.
Okay.
So the first time you use each program, it comes up and talks about it. But after that, you don't have to worry about it anymore. So what that does is if a program comes up that you didn't start,
yeah,
or, you know, whatever, it could be a legitimate program, but it might not be. So you can say, you know what, don't run it right now.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Zone Alarm lets you tweak things that way. And, of course, once it's up and running, you can go in and tweak things. Some routers let you do that internally to themselves as well.
But some
of them do not. And again, I don't know Comcast very well.
Right.
Yeah.
It may be worth giving Comcast a call and saying, look, I want to use Skype here, but I still want to be protected. Which of the settings that you provide would be the best choice for me?
All righty.
I suspect the peer-to-peer programs they're really against are the programs that let you share music
copyrighted content.
Yeah, copyrighted
the
content.
The noise program.
And other stuff.
Okay.
Stuff you don't want to get involved in.
Thanks for your time. I really love your show.
Thanks so much.
Thank you for calling.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Sure. Bye.
Yeah, that's a problem we seem to have regularly. That dichotomy between let's keep this system clean and protected, and, well, now I can't do anything.
Right. Well, you know, security and convenience, they live at the opposite ends of a vast spectrum, and you have to figure out where you want to live on that spectrum in order to get your work done and to have the life that you want, but still not be dealing with lots of extra hassle that you don't really want to deal with.
Right, right. I often tell people if you really want your system to be secure, encase it in concrete and drop it in the river.
Yeah, unplug it, yeah.
And it will be completely secure, I promise you. But all right, listen.
Getting anything up on the screen could be an issue too.
Exactly. Our next caller is Tim from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Tim. What's up?
I have a question about setting up wireless HP fridge. It's HP 1102, and I thought that once it's configured, doesn't the printer, is it its own wireless point, so you don't have to have it connected to a computer?
Is it an 1102 or an 1102W?
Probably the
1102W.
W. Yeah, the W means wireless. HP is really good at doing those suffixes.
Yeah. If it is a W, then it does indeed have wireless in it.
Right, and chances are good that it will work in one of two ways, depending upon how recent it is. It will either connect to an existing infrastructure Wi-Fi network that you have, or you can have it sort of create its own point-to-point Wi-Fi between it and a laptop or a mobile device like a tablet or a phone.
Well, my target is, so I have a desktop Mac that's wired, connected to with the USB port.
Okay.
But I want to disconnect that so I can get to it with my desktop Mac, my MacBook Pro, and my Nexus 7 tablet. So is that possible?
Yes. There is a setup utility that you can download from HP themselves that will allow you to, number one, turn on the wireless radio that's built into the printer, and number two, assign it a name and make it available on your existing wireless network.
So do I configure it by connect my MacBook or my iMac to the printer with the USB port and then configure it that way? Is that how it's done?
That's right. That's exactly
the
order you do it in. Yep. And you can find the software there either on the CD.
I saw somewhere that it actually does it have its, like, the setup looks like an HTML page on the printer. Is that true?
Yeah, but basically what you do is you connect it through the... they will give you directions on how exactly to do it. But one of the ways you can do it is that you actually go to it with your browser.
Right. Okay. They provide either a way to do that manually through the browser, or they also provide a tool, an actual application that you run on your iMac that will allow your iMac to talk to the printer through the USB cable and make all of the configuration changes that it needs. And then from then on, it will be available as a wireless device.
One of the problems you have is if you've got, for example, a password on your network, you can't get the printer on the network to configure the printer for the network.
Now, some of those HP units have become pretty advanced. They have the ability to enter the password right on the device itself. There.
So would the printer have its own password? Or do I use my network's password?
Well, to get it on the network, you use the network password, yes.
Okay, so then the wireless router has to be operational when I want to print something, is that true?
Yep.
If you Google for 1102W wireless setup Mac, you'll see that the first hit is some guy on YouTube who has put together a video that will walk you right through how to set this up on your Mac.
Great. Okay, so that's my question. I'll do Google for that, for 1102W wireless setup, and then I should be able to find a video and help me out.
Yep.
There you go.
Make sure to include the word Mac on that, and that will really help.
Yeah, I certainly will. Thanks, guys. Wonderful to have you guys around on Saturday. Good day.
Thanks, Tim.
Thanks, Tim.
Yeah, bye.
Have fun. Good luck with that printer. Wireless printers are really nice because now you don't have to have a print server.
Right. Yeah, it's built in.
Yeah, I've still got a print server in my house because I've still got an old printer.
Right. Well, the other way to do that is to leave it connected to the iMac via USB, and the iMac itself can act as the print server, and you can share it across the wireless network. Too.
Right. But then the iMac has to be on all the time.
That's true. Yeah, and well, as long as you want to print, yes.
Right, yep. Exactly.
That's how we do it at my house. My wife's got the laser printer connected to her iMac, and that's how we send things to it.
And that works. There's nothing wrong with it. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dennis Worster, Dave Enright, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 21 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites on the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Dennis Worster.
And at 26 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites.
Still?
It's unbelievable, isn't it?
And you know what? We should mention.
We should probably mention.
Segue into.
Exactly. Our 25th anniversary is coming up.
Very
August
nice.
30th.
That's longer than my first marriage.
Which, it certainly, I have, yes.
The, yeah, it's longer than my first marriage.
I'm not going to say anything. The 25 years, and it's August 30th. From noon to 2, we will be at the Lovin' Cup.
Nice.
Going live on the air. It's going to be a fun afternoon.
Scary.
And I personally cannot wait. It's going to be... very cool. If you want more information about it, please go to jazz901.org.
Yeah, and Rob's even given me the day off and let me come to it. Mike's going to fill in the board here.
Yep.
So I can be there, and it's going to feel odd. I mean, what, we've been here, let's see, we came here, so it's been 6 years. It'll be 6 years.
That sounds about right.
We've been here, and I've been running the board. And, I mean, for 19 years, we were always, you know, around the desk, you, me, and Steve, back in the day with good old Bob Smith.
Sure.
And, you know, just sitting there talking and chatting away and never had to worry about a thing. Now it's like everything for the past 6 years is in my lap, and it's like, it's going to be cool to sit back for a little bit and like the old days and just go over some of the stuff and, you know, kind of reminisce, too, 25 years.
And the Lovin' Cup, you know, you can order your favorite refreshing beverage there.
And
do whatever you want.
Yeah, great food there.
It's great.
Yeah.
But, all right, to the news.
Yes.
Apple.
Again?
Reportedly put in its biggest order yet for new iPhones. While numerous reports have said production of Apple's next iPhone models is set for August, it now looks like it's going to be the largest ever with somewhere between 70 to 80 million units. Now, please remember... This is mostly a rumor. That number will be split up between two models, the report claims, a 4.7-inch model and a 5.5-inch model, both of which will come in well above the iPhone 5 and iPhone 5S's 4-inch display. To put these figures in perspective, the Wall Street Journal notes that Apple ordered somewhere in the ballpark of 50 to 60 million units for last year's iPhone 5S and 5C. The 5S went on to have extreme shortages, with new buyers quickly facing a week-long wait. Both phones went on sale at the same time and to the largest group of launch countries yet. One major difference since then is Apple inking a deal with China Mobile this past December, which has about 759 million subscribers at the time and now has more than 790 million.
Now, just to put that number in perspective, the entire population of the United States is what, 350 million?
Yeah, exactly.
So that's more than twice as many people that they have, not just in their country, but just as subscribers.
To that one phone company.
Right. So imagine if you had two United States and everybody had a phone contract. And then you're getting close. So yeah, Apple's got to put together a lot of phones to meet that demand. And it sounds like, according to this report, that they are ramping up for that.
We'll see. Apple's next iPhone, which is expected to be called the iPhone 6.
Shocker.
Yep, is rumored to include a number of new hardware features. So far, that list includes a redesign with a rounder body, a sapphire screen that's tougher than Corning Gorilla Glass that Apple has used before, a better camera, a built-in barometer. I have a barometer on my Samsung Galaxy S5.
Okay.
So I can now tell how bad my arthritis is going to hurt tomorrow.
Okay.
Great.
There's an app for that?
Yes, there is. to gather environmental information, possibly tie into Apple's much-expected wearable. The journal's report comes on the eve of when Apple announced its third quarter earnings, where the iPhone continues to play a key role. Of course, as Conan O'Brien quipped, the new iPhone is expected to have a larger screen and a better operating system. The new iPhone will be called last year's Samsung Galaxy. But I'm bummed. Thank you. He'll be here all week. Tip your weight, Steph. Waiting for the new iPhone with bated breath? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
You know, it's pretty sad that, you know, the Mac now and Apple are mainly relying totally on their phones.
Well, they're drawing the vast majority of their revenue from the phone.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, but I mean, computers, it's almost like granted, they're still putting out computers, but not like the old days.
Well, nobody is. If you take a look at Amazon, which is a good barometer of who's buying what, the top 10 selling items are all Chromebooks.
Yeah, but here's my point. And that's what I was going to lead to, is, you know, they've been going to the desktops, and they see how the Chromebook is doing. You know, and they've got great laptops. But to get something even smaller and as a competitive,
right,
with a little edge towards the Apple, you'd think they'd want to do something like that. That's another potential market, that if you have something small, slim, these tablets that you could also put into like the Windows, that you could put it into a little clip and have an attachable keyboard, or a roll-up keyboard. You know, I mean, Apple's great like that. I still like it. I wish more laptops than that could come up with it. I love what Apple came up with is that magnetic connector for the battery.
Yeah, they copyrighted that, and so you can't use it unless
that,
you pay
that
them.
Is so sad.
And
because
an exorbitant
it's a
amount
fantastic
of money.
Invention.
That is so sad that, you know, it is limited just to them.
Yep.
Because more folks that I know will get their laptop, they just all of a sudden walk off with it, and it's still attached.
Or the dog
and they
runs
snap,
by.
Yeah, it's or on the, it's they on the, step, you know, accidentally have it on the couch.
Right.
And they go to get up, and they step, like you say, step on the cord, they pop that out or bend it.
Yeah. Yep.
And snap it. Whereas if it was the magnetic, boom.
This MagSafe adapter, and I'm taking it apart and putting it back together.
Yeah,
it is. It's a fantastic
invention. The cat's pajamas, as somebody would say.
Yeah.
It's an Apple feature. Apple is still innovating in that market, and they are innovating in the desktops and in the laptops. They've made fantastic equipment that, unfortunately, it's not as cheap, but for a similarly spec'd PC laptop, you're going to pay roughly as much, and I know that for certain because where I work, we have people that use both Windows and Macs, and we spec out similarly equipped equipment, and our invoice prices are pretty much the same
Right, but what the Amazon thing proves is that people don't need all that anymore in their desktop. If you can get it on the web, you can get it in the cloud, you don't need it in your computer.
Yep.
Yeah, no, I think there's a possibility that this is really going to be big. You know, Scott McNeely from Sun was talking about the thin client for years and years, and that was 20 years ago now.
Yep.
And we're finally to the point now.
50 years ago, we had dumb terminals. Same idea.
Same idea, but now we've finally got batteries that you're willing to walk around with because they don't weigh 3 tons.
Right.
And you don't develop shoulder problems from the gigantic bag that you would need. So. Right now, I'm holding.
It's a Samsung.
Which model is this?
It's the Samsung. No, it is not a Samsung.
It's a Toshiba.
It's a Toshiba.
And it's a Chromebook. It has a very cute Chrome logo on the top. Google Chrome. And it's got what? An Intel?
It's an Intel processor, 2 gigs of RAM, 13.3 inch display, 9 hour battery life.
Yeah. And what does it have for local storage? Not as much because it expects that you're going to do most things in the cloud.
Well, two things. First, it's got 16 gig in it.
Okay.
Which I could have replaced with a 32 or a 64 or 100. It's all
and that's,
SSD.
That's just flash storage?
That's just SSD. Okay. Right. Also, it's got an SD card slot.
Okay.
So I can have unlimited storage.
Right.
In my other bag, I've got movies.
Okay.
Full movies on SD cards.
Right.
Right. So, when I take a train or I'm sitting somewhere, I can watch a film. I can listen to music. I can do, 64 gig SD cards are pretty cheap nowadays, and you can put an awful lot of music on a 64 gig card.
All right. So now the big question, what would somebody expect to pay for a laptop like that one?
About $300.
Okay.
So $250.
So, and that comes with Wi-Fi. Now, there are other models that also come with 3G coverage,
wireless 3 or 4G. My other laptop is a 14-inch screen, 4 gig of RAM, wireless. This I won. The other one I paid for.
Okay.
And that was $400.
Okay.
So, yeah, you pay a little more for 4G, and you would expect that. And you pay more for more RAM. They always stick you on RAM.
Right. This runs the Chromium OS?
Yeah, essentially.
Okay, which is essentially your world inside a web browser and whatever websites you want to go to plus whatever local apps happen to run inside that, probably based on JavaScript or
It's HTML5,
okay.
JavaScript, and CSS, and now the new ones will have the Go language. Dart, I think it's called. Dart.
Okay. So that's a different tangent to what we've seen in the past,
exactly.
Where people have had full-on computers and just tried to make them portable. This is a different logical approach where you come at it from, most of the things I need are online, most of the things I want to do are not that high impact, so give me battery life above all else and let me do what I need to do.
Right, and I tell people all the time, you want to know if a Chromebook is good for you, go to your laptop or your desktop and see how much stuff you can do without leaving the Chrome browser.
Right. Well, and there is a vast majority of what I do during the day.
Well,
with a tab.
Exactly. And I'm the same way. When I was working, I'm retired now. I should have done it 40 years ago.
you make it sound pretty good.
It's phenomenal. I recommend it to everyone. But when I was working, you go to meetings. What do? You take notes. You know, maybe you log into a system to fix something, whatever.
Right.
I can do all of that here. It's only when I'm writing high-end code or I really want to do high-end audio or video, which, frankly, I never do, that I need a desktop or a laptop with real processing power.
So it sounds like this is the perfect casual computer.
Right. If you want...
If you're not a developer and you're not a gamer.
Exactly.
If you are an everyman.
If you're an everyman and most of what you do is... notes, write a book. I was writing a book. I sat in a cafe and their internet went out. I didn't even notice.
Right.
Other people, they say, well, you have to be connected. You always have to be connected. Tell me what you do when you're not connected to the internet. You read a book.
Minesweeper.
You believe Minesweeper. But I kept working because it went into offline mode. And the only way I knew that I was in off that the internet was gone was because I looked around and saw all these other people complaining.
Right.
And, oh, yeah, I'm in offline mode, it said.
All right. So for people that don't know what offline mode is, offline mode is.
Right.
We'll talk about that.
We'll talk about that when we come back because we're going to take another break right now. And we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dennis Worster, Dave Enright, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 39 minutes after the hour. If you're on the phone, stay on the phone. If you're not on the phone, why not? Give us a call. We'll be back with a whole lot more sound bites on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Dennis Worster.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And we were in the middle of talking about Chromebooks.
Yes, we were talking about Chromebooks, and you were mentioning that you do lots of writing and that you go to the coffee shop and you're writing along, and suddenly the Wi-Fi goes out, and you don't skip a beat because of something called offline mode.
Offline
mode.
And
I said, whoa, 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 wait a minute. What's offline mode?
Well, and what I did was I set that up, and what it does is it copies all your documents down to your computer.
Your local storage.
Your local storage.
Okay.
So the first time it takes a little while to pay, I had thousands of documents.
Okay.
There, almost 2,000 documents. But they all came down and they're all stored here. Great. And when you are writing, if you have Wi-Fi, of course, it's writing, it's saving everything up there.
Mm-hmm. Every
if
few
Wi-Fi
seconds,
disappears,
I think, right?
Every few seconds, which is also a beautiful, beautiful thing. Essentially, every time I stop typing, it saves it.
Mm-hmm.
So when it went offline, instead of saving up to the cloud, because it couldn't get to the cloud,
right,
it saved it all on my hard drive.
Okay.
And then when their wireless came back on again, it synchronized everything back up to the cloud.
And it did that for you? You didn't have to tell it?
Automatically, I did nothing.
You just kept typing?
I just kept typing.
And there was just, a little message in the corner that said, hey, hang on, we're in offline mode. And then it said, oh, wait, we've got our internet back. You're good to go.
Yeah, pretty much.
Thumbs up.
Thumbs up. And I made sure, you know, I finished what I was doing. I went home and I didn't even open the laptop. I went to my desktop. And I went and looked at the document I had written on the web, and all the data were there. So clearly it had worked.
Mm-hmm.
It had synced it without me even noticing it, frankly.
Right.
So it was really very cool. I was pretty impressed by that. And again, it depends entirely on what it is you do with your day.
Right.
But for most people who take notes in meetings, do email, surf the web, look stuff up, whatever that's all about.
Sure.
It's the thing that, you know, for a couple of $100, I was going to get the $200 one. It's an 11-inch screen. It really was perfect. It's the right size. The keyboard's not cramped. The problem is my eyes are not 11-inch screen eyes anymore.
Sure.
I had to go to the 13, 14-inch screen.
So what about printing? You know, we talk about these, essentially it's an internet terminal that goes around with you because it's portable, but there are still some times when you want to do something a little bit more tangible.
If you're buying the right printer, it comes with Google Cloud Print.
Okay, tell me about that.
Which is essentially wireless, and you give it a name and an address, and you set it up and say, okay, you can print to this printer from Google Drive.
Okay, so doesn't that also mean that as long as you are at any computer, you're logged into your Google account?
As long as you're logged into your Google account, you can send it to that printer.
So you could be at a buddy's house, log into your Google account, find a document you like,
print
and say,
it.
Hey, I'm going to go print this out so it'll be at home when I'm when I get there?
Exactly right. In addition, you can have a printer connected to a regular desktop, and again, as long as you have Google Chrome open, you can set it up to Cloud Print. And all you do is leave your printer on, and it'll print. Or if your computer is off, when you turn it back on again, it prints then.
What about if you've got like a thumb drive full of photos or other things? Can you handle arbitrary data that's just on a thumb drive?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
You can do it two ways. One is with a product called Picasa.
Sure, for photo management.
Love
photo
management. Picasa.
I know that
Picasa.
One.
Yes.
And that's another Google thing, and it comes with this. And one of the products you can download is called Pixlr Editor.
Okay.
Which is the, I shouldn't say poor man's Adobe.
Photoshop?
Photoshop, thank you.
Well, the thing about Photoshop is It's super pricey.
Well, it's
and
super pricey.
And unless you want to get a subscription these days.
Yeah.
Honestly, take a look at Pixlr Editor.
Okay.
It does everything I have ever needed to do for a picture, and it's free.
Yeah, Photoshop's more for the high-end user. I mean, you're professionals and that type of stuff. It's way out of most folks' league.
Right. If you are a professional, God bless you. Mm-hmm. You need that and you need
it. Get it and spend the bucks. Like you said, Dennis, you know, it is pricey.
It's a pro tool.
But if you're just the sort of person who wants to play around with photos and do some stuff, why are you paying that kind of money? I can do everything on here that you can do on there, and it's going to cost me, well, by the time you configure that and buy Adobe Photoshop,
forget
it's
about
like a tenth of the price.
Right.
Yeah. So, again, it means a different way of working, but it doesn't mean you're losing out on something.
Right.
All right, we better go back to the phones. Al has been very patient on the line waiting to talk to us. Hi, Al, what's up?
Oh, nothing. It's a good thing I am patient as well. I just wanted to talk to you guys about today's poll. In my personal opinion, I figure it's a good idea.
Okay.
I mean, like, with the NSA, with all the security problems that we've been having throughout the country these years, I mean, like, they really should continue to do it. I feel like that Apple should continue to sync with the NSA and maybe help protect us even more.
All right. Well, that's definitely definitely one way to go. I think that the NSA probably, who knows if they went to Apple in the back door and out the side of their mouth said, hey, Apple, we could really use your help here. We know you're selling a lot of these phones. You know, you love your country, don't you?
I'm proud to be an American.
Yes, and I'm sure Apple is happy to do that and have all the protections that America presents to them, too. I'm sure they are willing to work along with them.
America also has... given some rights to the average citizen that says you can't be spied upon unless you know about it and agree to it.
Exactly, which is why I prefer Samsung.
Yeah. I see. So you think Apple should keep doing it because you don't own an iPhone.
Exactly.
So you want the NSA to spend all its time
watching the iPhone,
watching
folks.
Dennis, and not watching us?
Yeah, it could be. Yeah, probably, pretty much. Yeah.
So that's okay. That's actually kind of devious, and therefore my hat is off to you, Al.
Thank you, but I'm just saying, if they do play it to Samsung, I'd be more than happy to do it, but I doubt they will.
Right. Well, you don't know.
I know, but like I say, you don't judge a book by its cover until it happens.
Right. What will be bad is if we find out that was something that was put in the phones by the Chinese manufacturers.
Oh, yeah.
I know, but we don't know until it actually happens.
That's an issue. You're right. And we won't know until we know.
Exactly.
All right, thanks, Al. Thanks for
no problem.
Makes sense to me. Go ahead and do that because I don't own one. That makes sense to me. Back just 1 second to the Chromebook. People look at them. It may not be the thing for you, but give yourself the chance to save hundreds, if not thousands, of dollars.
Is this the desktop Linux that Linux always wanted to have?
Yeah, in many ways it is.
Yep.
The year, you remember how every year for the past, I don't know, 20 years.
This is the year your mom
desktop.
Is going to be able to use desktop Linux. And it was like 1997. And then in 1999, we heard the same thing. And in 2001, the same thing.
Yep. But this is it. I can pin to the bar down here, Mom, see the big red M?
Sure.
That's an envelope. It's your mail.
A mnemonic.
Exactly. And pop up it comes.
Sure.
And if I've opened it, and I obviously can replace these. I've got a lot of these that I wouldn't give to Mom.
Right. So what about the malware profile? You know, comes to Windows and Mac, we're concerned about malware.
So far, there is no vector because there's no hooks.
Okay.
Anywhere in this operating system. You can add apps.
Right.
But they don't hook into the OS. When you stop running the app, seriously, it's done.
Okay.
So there's
not a lot of background processes. It's all apps that run on top of the OS.
Right.
Kind of like your iPhone.
You can set an app because you and I yes. can set an app to run in the background. We can okay. make that happen. But generally, most of them are not processing in the background.
I see.
So there's a lot of that stuff that is less of a problem.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And again, who's writing viruses for the Chromebook?
Nobody I've heard of.
Yet. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Dennis from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Dennis. What's up?
Well, I have a question about my iPhone 4S.
Yeah.
Is Dennis, your guy Dennis there, are you familiar with the iPhones at all, even though you don't have one?
I do have one. In fact, I'm holding my 4S now. How may I help you?
Dennis is the Mac guy, and he has an iPhone. It's me. I have a Samsung Galaxy S5. Dave has a Razer Max.
Ah, well, then this is going to be easy.
Yeah.
Periodically, or almost every day, I watch an app for TV, a local TV station news.
Okay.
And as I'm watching the things and pressing the video arrow, you know, to start the video, every once in a while a thing comes up and says, here's your token, and then it says, okay. Well, I don't do that. I just close out the whole thing and start from scratch again. It's like a couple lines of series of numbers and letters and things. Do you know what that is all about?
I could hazard a guess. Can you give me more information about which TV station is providing you this application?
Channel 13.
Okay, Channel 13.
I have not used that. Actually, I do have the Channel 13 app. But if it's what I think it is, you're getting. They've made a deal with somebody, somewhere,
right.
To provide tokens that you can use to buy things in the app.
Is that true?
Well, I can't think. I can't imagine what else it would be.
I'm going to try and
install it. It's like at least a two-line series of letters and numbers and lowercase letters. And
I imagine it's some kind of unique identifier that identifies your connection to them.
But I never want to do it because I really don't know what it's for, so I close down the app and then just...
This is the weather app, right?
No, it's the new local news app. It's the... I don't really pay much attention to the weather app itself. I just do the local news.
Okay. We are all furiously Googling over here, so if we sound a little distant, it's not you. Trust us.
We're not interested
in figuring this out. By design, people like us are puzzle solvers, so when we see something that's kind of interesting like this and we have a little bit of information to go on, we love to solve that mystery. So we are
I'm clearly not typing the right information.
And I don't really use a lot of apps, so I mean, I don't know if this happens all the time on other apps and it's a normal thing to have happened or not.
Right.
No, mostly it does not.
It doesn't sound normal to me.
Okay.
What it does sound like
this is the 13 Wham News app.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. What it does sound like is that there's some form of you get points of some sort for using the app. Now, what you can do with those points, I got nothing.
I'm installing it now.
But you know, you have to go like two through. I'm gonna let you guys. I'm gonna
we'll
hang
take your
up
answer off the
guys,
air. Okay.
If you come up with something at some point, that'd be great.
All right, we'll keep listening.
But you have to keep. I mean, it doesn't happen immediately when you do your first news. Like you could be going through three or four or five articles. It pops up sometime, although every time you're on the app with before you close out the app.
Okay. Well, we will we'll research this. We will look at it during the breaks here, and please keep listening. We'll make sure to mention Dennis if we come up with a good fix here for you.
Great. Thanks for your help.
You got it.
All right. Thanks.
Well, one thing he probably could do is just try and blow away the app itself,
right.
Delete it, and then restart the phone just for good measure, and then go back to the App Store and download it again.
Yes, I seem to not actually have it on my phone.
I'm pulling it down, but
what the
but
Channel 13 app?
Yeah,
I've got it on mine.
Well, we'll take a look at it.
We'll see if you can get that dialogue to pop up where it says something about tokens and then has some big long string after it of text.
No, see, mine just comes up.
This is great radio, guys. You know.
This is great radio.
No, it just comes up.
Yeah, we'll play with it later.
Okay.
You're going to have a phone this big someday. You'll be a big boy, too.
I don't know.
Ooh.
He set his gigantic Samsung tablet cafeteria tray sized phone next to my svelte iPhone 4S, which is out of date, but
it's also thicker than my phone.
A little bit.
Yeah,
it does have a case on.
Oh, it does have a case on.
Not much, but
my actual screen area is the size of your whole phone. But you know what?
But it won't fit into my tactical pants if I do this.
That's exactly. Well, it's not very tactical if you don't have a bigger pocket than that to put like your Glock in and stuff. That ought to fit my phone if it fits your gun. It's, for Pete's sake,
I don't know
if he has guns or not. I'm making a joke. Stop! Don't call.
Direct all your attention to.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Send your letters.
Oops.
But yeah, it's you know what? It's an interesting fact of life that some people want different. And having a bigger phone or a thinner phone or a phone with different colors or phones that do different things.
And this is not even the largest phone I've seen. I mean, Nick, that's I'd call that almost a medium-sized phone. I've seen some that are the size of your entire hand. I can't believe it. And it's like they hold it up to their face and it's like, where did they go? I can't see their head anymore.
Yeah, the Galaxy Note, that's big.
Yeah, those are what they now call phablets. They're phone tablets.
It's like a 5x7 index card that they hold up to their head.
Exactly. Even I think that's a little much. just a little bit. All right, we've probably bashed everybody's favorite something in the last hour, and that was fun, but we have a whole nother hour to do it all over again, so don't go anywhere. Don't touch that dial. None of you are old enough to remember that. We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dennis Worster, Dave Enright, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 59 minutes after the hour, and for no discernible reason, you continue to listen to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. We are Soundbites on the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1. Stay tuned. We'll see you on the other side.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worster.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, we're hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites. And we will jump right to Howard, yes, calling us from Irondequoit, New York. Welcome, Howard. What's up?
Yes. Well, I made one of the old proverbial mistakes. I put administration password on the computer and misplaced the information.
Howard.
Is there any way I can recover?
What operating system?
Windows 7.
Yeah, we're all kind of
I know.
We're wincing.
We're playing the Jeopardy music in our heads.
Yeah, exactly. Short answer, not so much.
Yeah.
Long answer, if you know somebody who's a real hacker,
It can be done.
We're not going to say how to do it here.
Yeah, I'm not going to say it over the air because
I wouldn't expect you to.
Yeah, but
I wouldn't want you to.
Yeah, no. Well,
but what you want to do is find a reputable dealer. Take your machine to them and explain to them the problem.
There are tools. Let's put it that way.
And theoretically, their backroom people will know the tools needed to do this job.
Okay.
Yep, yep.
That's what I kind of thought it might be, but I just wanted to run it by you guys first to make sure.
Yeah. It is doable.
We call that computer forensics. And
there are
people that can make that happen. Contact your favorite local shop and give them a call and see if they can help you out.
Okay, good enough. Thanks a bunch.
You got it.
Okay, bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
Yes.
One of the things you really need to do in general is if you... And a setting administrative password is a very, very, very good idea. We tell people all the time, don't run as the administrator regularly.
Right, because the administrator account is privileged. It has access to lots and lots of deep hooks in the machine. So if you're running a piece of software that may not have all of the bits and pieces lined up quite right or may have... a developer
been compromised in some way.
Yes, that's been adjusting things in the meantime. It could do bad things to your computer. So running as what we call a non-privileged account, what we call
just a regular
user account, is a good way to keep yourself protected.
But that means you have to actually remember your admin password.
Yeah. And, yeah.
And there is no such thing as a password you will never forget. Trust me. Yeah, because really. The one time you need it, you'll forget it.
That's yeah. right.
And that's the thing. There are tools out there. But again, you know, we won't, just like we will not tell folks how to go into the registry and play around in there because we do not want the responsibility or the liability of messing up their machines because people get click happy.
That's exactly right.
And I'm not going to do it.
Yep. Yep.
But, you know, matter of fact, I had somebody one time email me and said, you know, that's pretty selfish. You know, it's like you're only doing it for the money. And because I wouldn't, you know, say how to go in and do a certain thing.
No, because Google's so hard to find, and, you know, God forbid figure out
what
to type in.
Well, but more importantly...
Well, they don't want to. They want instant gratification. They want you... Because you know you're being an idiot or an A for not doing it and sharing it with them. And he goes, well, tell me offline. I go, no, I'm still not even through this email going to tell you how to do it. If you want it done, bring it in and I will do it.
And
I know what the heck I'm doing.
More importantly, and I'll say the hard facts, we don't know you.
No.
We don't know if that's actually your computer. You just want to break into somebody else's machine.
Mm-hmm.
You bring that machine into the office, we've got a much better chance of knowing whether or not it's yours and we can deal with it. We don't know you.
Exactly.
I'm sorry, we just don't.
Mm-hmm.
It's not personal.
It's not personal. We just don't know you.
You're protecting yourself.
All right, back to the phones, and we don't know Mark from Greece. Welcome, Mark. What's up?
Hello.
Hello, Mark.
I wanted to just bring up quickly, you guys had mentioned photo software and mentioned Photoshop. Uh-huh. I just wanted to remind everybody about the GIMP.
Yes, the GIMP.
Oh, yeah, the GNU Image Manipulation Program.
I think it does about 95% of what Photoshop does if you're really that kind of user.
Yep.
And it's free.
Free, free, free. It is.
And you can donate if you really love it.
Right, it runs on pretty much every operating system you've ever heard of.
Right.
And as we always say, you should donate if you can because it encourages them to keep making that software better.
And it's actually better if you've never used Photoshop to try out the GIMP first because you won't have developed a lot of Photoshop habits. And think that the GIMP is doing things differently.
And if you want to take a look at it, it's at GIMP.org. It's the GNU, G-N-U, GNU, is in fact how they pronounce GNU in the GNU software world.
Okay.
I know it's new if it's the beastie.
The beast, yes.
But the GNU software pronounces it GNU. So it's the GNU Image Manipulation Program, GIMP. It's free. It does photo retouching, image authoring, all kinds of stuff. And Mark is right. It's about 90 to 95%, of what you can do with Photoshop. And it has and if it doesn't do it, there are plugins to do it. It's got a very rich, batch of plugins that you can add to it. And again, it's free.
Mm-hmm.
There you go.
Thanks.
Yep.
Thank you so much, Mark.
You're welcome.
We appreciate that. Love the GIMP. Again, when I'm back at my desktop, I will use the GIMP to do stuff. But when I'm out and about, again, most of what I need to do, I can do with Pixlr Editor on the Chromebook. It's pretty cool.
It works.
And they all work pretty well. Again, I don't do really, really high-end stuff.
Yeah, I know. Same here. You know, maybe a little touch-up or
here and
there. Yeah, but you won't. The average person will not even use a tenth of the powers within Photoshop.
That's exactly right.
All right, new topic, guys.
Yeah.
Let's say you've had a machine for a while and you've replaced it. What do you do with the old machine?
Oh, I love that question. I love that question. To me, that's always an opportunity to play with Linux.
Sure.
Because the operating system is free.
True.
You've got this old hardware. It still works. It may not work great anymore. It may be slow.
Uh-huh.
But you get to play with Linux and another operating system and all that stuff. You just mentioned putting Chromium on one of them.
I honestly think that's for the average person, I think that's an even better idea than Linux I don't want to have to deal with startup scripts.
Where do you get your Chromium? Is it Hexen?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, that's the one that I found.
It's Hexen.org or Hexen.
That's another way to go. So what if you do if the machine is broken in some way? There's some component that you don't feel like fixing and suddenly it's just junk.
What I do with a machine that I do not feel like fixing anymore, I take out the drive.
Yeah.
I drill holes in it.
Okay.
And then I take it to a recycling center.
Okay.
I like smashing the hard drives.
A nice 5-pound sledge.
Oh, yeah, it does. Turns it into a maraca all the time.
I want the problem. Well, I want to take one of these and use it as a skeet.
Okay.
Oh, that'd be cool.
The problem, well, the problem with that is that there's a lot of heavy metals in a drive.
Yeah.
And you'd need to do it somewhere that's already a wasteland of some sort, like in the desert or whatever, where you're not going to harm any life by throwing these heavy metals around like this. But, oh, let me tell you, I will admit to having done it, and it is possibly the most satisfying thing, particularly if you know what's on that hard drive.
Keep your safety glasses on.
Well, yeah. Kathy's laptop broke. So I says, because she was worried about the data, you know, getting in the wrong hands. Unlike one of my friends that just took her laptop apart.
Yeah.
And went around the neighborhood distributing it apart in each dumpster. Well, anyways, took out her hard drive, and I had the little screwdriver, and we took out all the screws, took it apart. She goes, oh, that's cool. I says, all right, now do you really want to ruin it? She goes, yeah, I want to make sure nobody gets it. I says, see those little fingers? Pull them back.
Yep.
So
yep.
The head's on the drive. I said, pull those back. She says, but we're breaking it. I go, yeah, that's the point.
That's the point, yeah.
So then I told her, take the screwdriver. And I says, now you just run it back and forth, up and down those platters.
Both sides, every platter.
We got them all taken care of. I says, there it is. It's gone.
Yep.
So, that's fun. Let's do it again.
Yeah, let's do it again. Let's take the ones out of your hard drive, Dave.
So, yeah.
No.
So we got a little bit of I got a little bit of real time feedback before we hit the phone.
Yes, please.
My wife has sent me a message, my lovely wife, and has let me know that tomorrow you can go to the Seneca Park Zoo and they are having an electronics recycling event. So if you're looking for something to do with the family, load them up in the car, open the trunk, put in that old equipment from the basement that isn't working anymore, things that you aren't going to use anymore, and drop it off. They will responsibly recycle it and you can go visit all the animals.
Cool.
That's really terrific. And the reason you do that is because there is so much stuff inside the computer that's actually poisonous.
Yeah.
It's not going to harm you in your home, but once you put it in a landfill and it starts breaking down and all of that stuff,
you don't want it in your drinking water.
Yeah. Very dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
If you send it to a recycling place, they will recycle
Break it down, take out the heavy metals
and do all of that stuff. So that's the thing you should do. So if you've got an old computer sitting around that you've been waiting to get rid of, take out the hard drive, drill holes in it, then take all of that to the zoo tomorrow.
Right.
All right, back to the phones. Good tip. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Rich from Irondequoit, New York. Welcome, Rich. What's up?
Hello. Welcome or good afternoon.
Thank you.
That is fun breaking up hard drives till you figure out that maybe that wasn't the one you were supposed to do.
Yeah.
Oops.
Oh, ship.
Yeah. Question. I have a ASUS mini or small laptop, and every time I go to use Firefox on it, I get a little message that pops up that says that I'm overusing the CPU.
All right.
It's Windows 8.1. Don't know. I click off of it, and everything is fine, and everything runs and works fine and everything else. But every once in a while, this message pops up and says that I'm overusing it. It's a warning.
Okay. How old is the machine?
Maybe a year old, if that.
So it came with the Windows 8.1?
Well, it came with 8, and then I downloaded the 0.1.
Okay. And how much memory is on it?
I think 4.
Yeah, see, no. 4 gig of memory is just a bare minimum to get even Windows 7 going. We usually recommend 8 or more. See, the thing of it is once Windows 7 came out, as much memory as you would throw in it, it would use it. And Windows 8 is a 64-bit operating or 32-bit operating system, I believe. Okay. Or you got it in 64.
I think I have it in 64.
Oh, then there you go. There, as Nick would say, the price of poker has gone up a little bit more. You need more power. So I would start with at least 16 gig of memory.
Really? Okay.
Yes, because doing 64-bit takes a lot of power.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You know, I'm not sure that this machine is upgradable to that or not.
It should be. I mean, if, again,
it's not that old, I know. But.
No, and it should be able to handle 16 gig. You might have to, if it doesn't have enough slots, you might have to take the the memory in and out and have it upgraded to, like I say, 16 or 32 gig. Because,
okay.
Again, the more memory you give it, the more dance floor it has to perform the different things that it's got to do.
Yeah, and the other thing, too, though, with this is it seems like it's only when I'm using Firefox.
Well, again, it
doesn't give me that message any other time.
Stop. Let me go back a step. Everything Dave said is correct, but in your case, this error message is strictly for the CPU. The amount of memory you have doesn't have a bearing on how much CPU is being used by one program. And the problem is that the latest build of Firefox, this is a known problem with it.
Yeah.
Okay, so, all right, that makes more sense, I guess.
Yeah, so if you were to, for example, load, certainly Internet Explorer, but I don't like that, or Chrome, and replace Firefox with, for example, Chrome.
Okay.
When you load Chrome, one of the things it will say is, do you want us to load the bookmarks from something else? Select Firefox, and it'll come up and look exactly like Firefox in terms of where your bookmarks are. You can have multiple browsers on your machine at the same time, so this doesn't mean you can't ever use Firefox again. What it means is try Chrome for a while and see if that CPU usage goes down.
Okay.
I found a page here on support.mozilla.org that talks about this specific error message. Firefox uses too many CPU resources. How do I fix this?
Oh, there you go.
And it's really good. I'm going to pass this over to Nick so he can make sure to document it for us, and we'll make sure it gets up onto the website.
Great.
But essentially, they talk about making sure that you've got the latest version of Firefox, and some of the other tips they provide include disabling some extensions or themes. Make sure that you're using something like AdBlock Plus to make sure that the ads that are running aren't using a lot of CPU.
Okay.
All right.
Things like that.
Okay, thanks. I'll look for it.
Sure.
All right, thanks. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dennis and Dave and Nick and a whole lot more on the longest-running computer show, Soundbites, member-supported Jazz 9.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worster.
And at 25 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And we have Steve from Greece, New York on the line. Welcome, Steve. What's up?
Well, guys, first of all, good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you.
And when you mentioned GIMP, you triggered a thought in me. When I do a presentation on tips and tricks,
okay,
I use GIMP as my example of always choose the advanced option when downloading.
Okay, tell us more.
Because if you just take the standard, you load everything. It's called standard, typical, or whatever.
Right.
But if you use the advanced, you're going to get two things that I guarantee you don't want. You take your next step of installation, they're going to say, okay, here's two more things we're going to load that you don't really want. So I think you guys should address the not using the standard, but to use the advanced. Even if all you're doing is looking at what they're going to put on your computer.
Yeah, that's true. I was actually looking at an application this week that would allow me to take files on my computer that are called ISO files or ISO files.
Yep.
And this particular application, the application itself is free, but clearly the developers still have this horrible habit called eating, and they want to get paid so that they can buy food to do that. So they chose a different model, and the way they chose to do it was their installer would install, or at least ask to, if you use that option that you were talking about, these other third-party pieces of software that really weren't something I wanted because they were spyware.
Right.
So it's important to take a look through and very carefully look through the installer at each step along the way, because it's very common for shareware or free software, free as in dollars software, to have what I'll call riders, tag-alongs that come along on the installer.
And if you choose the typical or custom or not typical or standard.
You just get them.
You just get them. So everyone should at least look. You don't have to uncheck anything. If you want them, fine. But take the advanced or custom, whatever they call it,
right,
and look at what you're going to be putting on your computer.
I'm sure Dave has seen it all the time where somebody will bring a machine into the shop and they'll say, I don't know how that got on there. And
oh, yeah.
Yeah, I do. You loaded it.
You loaded it, but you just didn't know you did it.
Right. Yeah.
And the developers weren't necessarily telling you if you were just picking the standard install.
Excellent point, Steve. One of the things I always say is one of the big differences between gurus and regular computer users is the gurus always use advanced when they're installing software.
And once in a while, we read the manual.
And once in a while, that's one of the other differences.
They have manuals?
Yeah, not anymore. They don't.
No, they're all online.
Yeah.
Again, that would take the effort of somebody to, you know, actually sit down, type in a search for that particular item that they're looking for. And all the manuals are out there. I don't care. I mean, I've got an old table saw, and I wound up going online. It's a Craftsman. I pulled it up. It's back from the 1950s because I needed to know the motor.
Mm-hmm.
Googled that, pulled up the manual. No problem. It was still there with all the specs, so now I know what motor to get to replace it, and I could do a search to find a motor.
I was working on an amplifier for my stereo, and it's an old tube-based amplifier.
Ooh. Yeah,
it's a classy one.
And that's a good one. No, that's a good one.
Well,
tubes are unbelievable.
So they... We found the manual for it, and the manual had the full schematic for the product.
Yeah.
It had every resistor labeled. It had every transformer labeled. So if something goes wrong, you know precisely what to solder out and solder back in. It was really impressive. But, boy, manuals and documentation, I could get on a huge rant, but here's the mini version of it. The reason I don't like the cloud, and there are many reasons that I do like the cloud, but one of the reasons I don't is because the documentation never keeps up. They constantly are revising feature sets. Gmail is my favorite example. They're constantly adjusting how features work. They claim that they're documenting it, but they don't ever go through and comb through the old documentation. So if you are looking for a description of how a feature works, you might get, oh, well, this is how it used to work 18 months ago, but not necessarily how it works now.
Exactly.
And it drives me crazy.
Yeah. Back when Windows first came out, you had to agree to their... once you opened the program, you said that you agreed with all their conditions and licenses.
Right.
But you couldn't read the conditions and licenses until you opened
it. It was a sticker on the back of the CD sleeve. I remember that when CDs got popular. They said, if you break this seal, you know, you're agreeing to everything, and if you don't like it, you should take it back and get a refund. Boy, yeah, those were the days. Now we just have a little box we check and click next.
Yep.
But Steve is right. Nowadays, we actually get to read the terms and conditions if we want to before we... Well, that's because the Supreme Court, somebody took Microsoft to court about this and went all the way up to the Supreme Court. Supreme Court said, if you don't have the opportunity to read it, you cannot legally agree to it.
There was an article a couple of years ago that said you'd need 76 work days to read every privacy policy that you encounter.
Most of them have a download now, a download button.
Yeah.
I download all of them, and I really don't get to as many of them as I used to.
Right.
Or you just skim them. You say, okay, this is what I'm giving you, okay. You don't read the whole thing.
Yeah, most folks are also looking usually for any dollar amounts that might stick out.
Yeah.
You know, scanning that in case they're going to incur any charges.
Right.
But again, some companies have gotten sneaky. Instead of putting it actually in numbers, they type it out.
Right. Right.
That's been another one because I've heard some folks say, well, I didn't agree to this. I didn't see any dollar amount. Yes, it was. You didn't see it typed out. You know, so many, instead of saying $34 and seeing an actual dollar sign, $34, they typed
words.
It all out.
Yeah.
The words $34.
Yeah. And that's a sneaky way of getting around it because most folks are skimming it quickly to see any dollar amounts.
Yep.
They go, oh, yeah, you did. See? You just didn't take the time. So, yeah, they've found other clever ways of doing it.
Yep. All right. Thank you, Steve. We appreciate that.
Have a good day.
Have fun. What I think we need is there probably are a dozen of them out there, websites that translate agreements speak into plain English.
There's one, our friends at the EFF, the Electronic Frontier Foundation.
Oh, yeah.
Have a nice one. Now, they last time they updated it was in 2005. But if you go to EFF.org, you can go see the article they have there called Dangerous Terms, A User's Guide to EULAs, or EULAs, or End User License Agreements.
Yep.
And it details specifically what the terms are and what you can do to understand them.
Nice. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Bob from Henrietta, New York. Welcome, Bob. What's up?
What's been going on with your website during the week the past couple of weeks? Some blue top real
yeah,
estate.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There's some issue somewhere. It apparently is not with DNS. It's somewhere else. Our hosting provider, God bless them, they've been working diligently. It keeps popping up. I'm sure that somewhere along the way the problem is my fault, something I did. But we haven't yet pinpointed it down to it's me, it's them, it's somebody else, it's I don't know what. But we're working on it, yeah. If you see it gone, you should know that I've already probably called our provider and gotten them back on it. And we're all kind of confused about this, but we're working on it.
Well, that's all I had. I just wanted to let you know somebody needs to be smacked.
Yep. And as soon, it's probably going to end up being me, but we'll find out. Thanks, Bob.
Have a good day.
You too. Yeah, what Bob is talking about is that sometimes you go to the Soundbites website and you see the, well, Soundbites website. Sometimes you go to the Soundbites website and you see a company called Blue Top Management. And at first we thought it was a DNS issue. Now we think it may be a CGI issue. We don't know.
It's an issue.
It's an issue. Anyway, we're working
Bless
on
you.
It. And, yeah, right.
Thanks for noticing.
Yeah. At least somebody's somebody's
yeah. the website. The this was a test. Yeah. The rest of you failed.
That's right. Bob's the
Bob
only guy
passed.
Who goes to the website on a regular basis.
Right. And calls us about it.
Yeah.
I have had numerous emails about this. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, thank you all. Feel free to keep sending them. But there's something not 100% right with it, and we're working on it.
Hmm. To be continued.
Yeah, exactly. And what are you going to do?
Well, we should mention again that we've got a 25th birthday party coming up for folks that didn't hear it in the first hour. But save the date, August 30th. We will be down at Loving Cup on the 30th doing our show live.
Wow.
Yeah, it's going to be way too much fun, so...
I mean, they're actually letting us out of the studio.
I'm looking forward to it.
It's been quite a while since we've been out of the studio, and that's going to be amazing.
Rumor has it that during this show, there is sunshine.
What?
Really?
I'm just saying. I've heard of it.
In Rochester?
Not.
Well, maybe not here.
Oh.
We never see it during the 2 hours that we're here, or
exactly.
3 hours or
where the listeners are, there might be some.
There might be.
Yeah. But
not here.
We can't
but
guarantee
we,
it.
We can't
we
guarantee
want to
it
believe.
We can't see it from here.
Yeah.
We're in a brick bunker.
Pretty much. Pretty close. With mics.
With mics. So,
well, you know, the only way I can tell if it's sunny out, and that's how I cheat sometimes on the weather, is I can look up here at the monitor.
Yeah.
And it's out
the
by the door.
Camera.
Yeah, the security
the
camera.
Monitor. Yeah,
and
yeah,
if I can
see
that there's shadows, I go, oh, okay, it's sunny out.
To the current conditions, sunny.
Right now, it's cloudy. No, because it's gray. It's very gray out there, uh-huh. So I can tell that, you
it's
know.
Not it's not a black and white camera, is it?
No, it's colored.
Okay.
Yeah, it's colored.
All right.
So, yeah, it's I can see the green grass, but it is very dark out there, so I know it's overcast skies.
Uh-huh.
So I can cheat a little bit.
I see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Speaking earlier of Chrome and Chromium and all of that, last month, Google said it was tired of mashed together bug fixes for OpenSSL. As you may remember, there was a bug called the Heartbleed bug that wreaked havoc on quite a number of sites.
Very much bad, yes.
And it all came from the secure socket layer SSL certificates. And Google says it's tired of mashed together bug fixes for OpenSSL. It decided to create its own fork called Boring SSL. It's now implemented that variant in the latest Chromium build, the open source software that eventually arrives in Chrome.
That's not a very sexy name for a product.
It really isn't.
Boring SSL.
I know. Well, the reason it's boring is because it just works every day, and you never have to think about it again.
No surprises, which is what you want with your security.
System admins like boring.
That's true.
OpenSSL is software used for secure connections, created largely by volunteers, and it's an overlooked code problem recently is what caused the famous heartbleed bug. When boring SSL was first announced, there was some grumbling from the security community about yet another flavor of SSL, but Google said that with over 70 patches now in OpenSSL, it's becoming unwieldy to implement in Chrome. It added that it wasn't trying to replace OpenSSL and would continue to send any of its own bug fixes to that group. It'll likely be implemented in the next version of Chrome, but you'll be able to try the beta soon. If you're feeling lucky, you can go to, and I'll put this up at some point, to chromium.org/getting-involved/dev channel if you want to use it now, and actually install it. So, are you tired of badly written software? Are you tired of turning around and every 4 minutes finding yet another security hole in your software that can take your whole machine down? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415. Chromium is the Chrome browser.
Okay.
Chromium OS is the Chrome OS
right.
operating system. And this is specifically for the browser. It will have its own version of OpenSSL.
Because Chromebooks have their own flavor of the OS, don't they?
Right. It's slightly different.
Because they want to talk to the hardware directly and make sure performance right. is good. And it's not as general as what I put on that old Dell Latitude that I had.
Exactly. And because it's all based on Linux, Google is following the Linux code, which is you can do anything you want with it. You just have to give it all back to the community so everybody else can do it too.
Right.
And that's what they're doing. And for the Chrome browser, as well as for the Chrome operating system, there are two channels. Well, there are three channels because nobody expects a standard position.
Yeah.
There's the stable channel, which is what you get on a Chromebook to start with.
Yep.
And then there is the dev channel, the developer's channel, which actually gives you more features but also may break.
Right. So you have to figure out which line of that one you want to surf on.
Right. So the thing I'm putting up here is the dev channel. Unless you're a developer, you probably don't want to play with it. We're going to take another break back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Dennis Worcester, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 39 minutes after the hour. Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worcester.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Roy from Pittsburgh, New York on the line. Welcome, Roy. What's up?
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Nice to listen again.
Thank you.
I have a couple of questions that come up here. Two questions. Number one, in running Malwarebytes in a malware,
yes,
I traditionally, running it every week, let's say, I get about 300 or 400 non-malware or something like that. Called pup.optional.something.
Okay.
And I usually put them all, quarantine them all, but I don't know where they're coming from or what they're used for. So that's question number one.
Okay.
What's a pup optional program? A lot of them have like pup optional dot white smoke.
Oh, so pup dot optional.
What?
Pup, P-U-P.
Yeah.
Ah, I misheard. Okay.
Potentially unusable or potentially usable
unwanted
program
programs,
or something
yeah.
like that.
Potentially unwanted program.
Yeah, something like that.
Right. Basically, what that means is Malwarebytes has seen this program, knows most people don't want it, but isn't going to get rid of it because maybe you do. So that's why you need to look at each one of those and say, oh, white smoke, I don't even know what that is. I'm going to get rid of it. Oh, this one, I know I don't want that. I'll get rid of it. Maybe you look them up on the web the first time you get them, whatever, and then you'll know what they're about and whether it's something you installed yourself or something you want or you don't want or whatever it is.
Well, there's usually a couple hundred show up within 1 week.
Well, right, and those are things that get installed. What is your operating system?
Windows 7 Pro.
And what browser are you using?
Firefox.
Yeah. Yeah, you'll get, and we used to say, you know, stop going to those kinds of websites, but the reality is they're on every kind of website now.
Yeah, the search I've done says that white smoke is a toolbar. That's one of those strips of icons that you see across your web browser. Do you think you have some of those in your Firefox window?
No. I don't think so.
No, because Malwarebytes is stopping them.
Oh.
And then he either allows them or removes them.
Okay. In general, if it's a... I have yet to see a web browser toolbar that has done anything useful for people. And
there's a web developer one you can install.
Okay, yes. I stand corrected.
You have to go get it.
Yes.
Right.
It's not tagging along in some software installer like we were talking about last break.
Right.
Well, I usually just quarantine them all, and I've never noticed anything.
Yeah, it's the right thing to do.
Any problem with that, but yet they keep showing up all the time.
They will come in with additional software. Some of them will try to install what they call a drive-by install. They pay somebody to write an ad and put it into Google Ads.
Sure.
So that when it pops up, it does an automatic install attempt.
But Nick is right. You want to go through that listing, that quarantine listing, do a little research, figure out if this is something you want or you don't, and then the quarantine is kind of like a holding pen for this software. And it doesn't mean that it's gone. It just means that it's currently not active. It would be, and to be clear about this, Malwarebytes is going to keep finding those things as long as they're on the computer to find, even if they're active or not.
Right.
So in order to have that number of items found get smaller and smaller, you need to evaluate each one and determine if it's something you want to keep or if it's something you want to get rid of.
Yeah, and then actually delete it as opposed to just quarantine it.
Correct.
I see. Well, I could delete it. If it's quarantined, it doesn't get used?
That's correct.
It doesn't get used, but it'll keep popping up on the report.
Malwarebytes is dutifully going to find everything that it is designed to find, and it will find those things whether or not they're running.
Oh, so if I quarantine it, then every time I run it, it keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger.
Well,
it keeps getting found. It says, hey, you haven't dealt with this yet.
Right.
Oh, okay. That's why the number's so big, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, it's nagging you.
Okay. Question number two.
Yeah.
On boot up, I usually get, it probably has to do with something I deleted, a box comes up during startup after I start Windows itself. It says something like DSD_4 digits, not responding. And it's usually a blank window. And this DSD number keeps changing every time. It looks like it's trying to start something, but can't find the program.
Is it maybe something in the startup group?
Not that I know of.
If you go down to the lower right-hand corner and you click on the start button, and you type in the search, you type in msconfig.
Yeah,
msconfig will open up, a nice little box, and one of the tabs is startup. And you can go through startup and see some of the things that are automatically starting up. And I turned quite a few of them off because, honestly, they're not needed. Oh, say like iTunes and Adobe. A lot of those you don't need running in the background. They're TSRs.
Right.
They start and they're terminate and stay resident. You don't need those running. So one of those errors might be something in the startup that is not needed anymore.
Is this on Windows 8.1, right?
No, Windows 7
Pro. Is it a Dell computer by chance?
Yes, it's
a Dell. It is a Dell.
Yep. Yeah, there you go.
There's an app called Dell System Detect that you might be able to remove. That might be worth checking into.
That might be in there. Now, if you remove them from the startup menu, that is, take the checkbox
right
away, would it still show up?
No, it shouldn't. It shouldn't start up then.
If you go to click the Start button and go to Control Panel, and then you can pick the program
right
and do the program features, you can navigate to Dell System Detect there. You can right-click on it and select Uninstall, and there'll be prompts
detect
that you follow along.
What's that do?
That'll uninstall that Dell System Detect application, and then it won't be there at launch to get in your way and present that message.
But I mean, what does the Dell System Detect program do?
I suspect that it is used for visiting Dell's website when you need to get warranty information or parts or
driver updates and all that type of stuff. It'll do an analysis on your machine and see if there's any video drivers that need updated or, say, sound card drivers or network cards that are built into the system.
It's a tool that tells the computer to sound off and tell the Dell website about itself so it knows which drivers to present to you.
Well, yeah, that could be doing it. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds like a good thing to have there, though.
Sometimes.
Well, yeah, yes and no. And if you want to keep it, then you'll just every once in a while get that annoying thing, and
that's life.
Well, it just stays up for maybe 3 or 4 seconds and then goes away.
Right. And now that you know what it is, you can just ignore it.
That's what I've been doing.
Yeah, because what will happen is when a system is starting up, there's 15 or 20,000 things that all try to happen simultaneously, and some of them have to wait. And some of them get impatient with waiting and start flashing messages. And that's essentially what's happening here. Then when it suddenly gets to do what it wants to do, that message goes away.
Well, that could be what's happened. It could be just waiting in line.
Yep.
Well, hard to say. Okay. Well, I just wanted some inputs from you experts on this.
Okay, thanks.
So that's helpful.
Sure.
Good.
Well, thanks for giving us a call.
Thank you, Roy. Going back to pups, they are very sneaky now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The way they're trying to install pretty much on everything. And it's like I say, it used to be you there were certain websites, let's just say, that you went to where you were more likely to get these things than otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
But the reality is they appear everywhere nowadays. Google does a nice job of saying, of finding these things in their advertising and getting rid of them, but there's billions of ads and only a few people searching, and so some of these get through for a while. So, you know, and they keep making new ones and changing the way they work. So you may get them, but you can easily get rid of them again.
Right. Malwarebytes calls them PUPs, P-U-P, for potentially unwanted programs. Mm-hmm. I know Sophos calls them PUAs for potentially unwanted application.
Yep, right.
So those are two terms that are synonymous.
Same name, or same meanings, just different names.
Right.
So all I did some research. Dennis called earlier from Rochester with his iPhone. He was asking about an app that he was using that was throwing a message. I eventually got the app downloaded. I've been flipping through it here as the show's been going on. I hate to be that guy. I have not been able to duplicate the behavior that he was seeing. So, Dennis, if you are listening, here's what I can recommend.
Of course he is.
Click and go back to your phone, press the home button until you get all the icons, find the icon for that particular application, press and hold on it until all the icons start jiggling, then tap that particular app again. That will let you delete the application. Then go back to the App Store and download it again, reinstall it, and see if you get the same result.
That's a good idea. And also, do not forget, August 30th, noon to 2, is our 25th anniversary.
Yeah.
Right, it's our birthday. And we will be live at the Lovin' Cup from noon to 2 doing the show live. It's going to be a grisly event, but we'll be there doing it. So we're done for another week. I want to thank everybody who called in. I want to apologize to everyone to whom we did not get. Call earlier and more often next week. Don't go away, though. George is coming in to play the best German music you'll hear all week. Michael is here to keep him on the straight and narrow, and We'll be back next week with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. I want to specifically thank Dennis Worcester for taking over from Steve. You did yeoman's deeds today. It was great.
Thank you for having me.
And for Dave Enright, I'm Nick Francesco. We'll be back next week with a whole lot more of Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.